Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, with my co-host tonight, Kirsten Milliken. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I've got these juggling balls, and I've been trying to get ready for this show tonight. I can't seem to get down.
It's funny because, everybody's juggling. My son was juggling earlier this morning. I don't know why. I'm like, this is odd. He's actually trying to juggle a bunch of oranges today. And it got me thinking about tonight because we got a real circus going on. We got a couple clowns with us tonight. Wouldn't you agree?
I definitely would.
There are two characters. We got Dr. Ari Tuchman and Dr. Roberto Olivardia. Both are frequent flyers on our show. We've done a couple different things, and for this particular topic, I couldn't think of anybody better than have on that. So real quick, this is Attention Talk Radio. Tonight is Wednesday, March the 13th in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some real quick announcements. If you're nationally and you're interested, but particularly if you're in the Dallas area, Chad is having their regional conference in early May in the Dallas area. To learn more, to go to chadd.org. To get more information on that. As a reminder, Attention Talk Radio is now part of the Attention Talk Network, which includes Attention Talk Video and Attention Talk News. Our videos can be accessed at attentiontalkvideo.com, and you can sign up for our bi-monthly newsletter on Attention Talk News by going to attentiontalknews.com. There's one other announcement that I was promising that I would make, and if you bear with me a second. One more click of the mouse. There's 2 weeks left, I guess, to submit an application for the Shire Scholarship Program. To do that, go to www.shireadhdscholarship.com. What that's about is you can apply to receive some financial aid to go to college or secondary school, and I believe it's a free year of coaching. Let's see if there's anything else I've missed. I think that's it for right now. Let's get into the main show. Kirsten, you want to introduce our guests?
I, as always, love to. So we've got Dr. Ari Tuchman, and you may recognize him because three books. The first one is Understand Your Brain, Get More Done, ADHD Executive Functions Workbook. And then More Attention Deficit, Success Strategies for Adult ADHD. And finally, The Integrative Treatment for ADHD, a practical, easy guide to use for clinicians. He speaks all over the world. Been to a conference that has anything to do with ADHD, most likely you've seen him at one. He also is a psychologist in private practice in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And then we have Roberto Olivardia, who was here with us last. And he, of course, is a clinical instructor at the Department of Psychology at Harvard Medical School. And he's in private practice as well in Lexington, Massachusetts, where he specializes in treating adults and adolescents with ADHD, eating disorders, body dysmorphic disorder, and obsessive compulsive disorder, which is what we talked to him about last week. And he's also taught at UMass Boston and Boston College. And, of course, he also is a frequent speaker at conferences across the United States. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. I can't wait to see what kind of circus act you're going to be putting on tonight.
Well, thank you for having us. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Just to frame out this show, is we've done a show with Dr. Olivardia on weight. We talked about the complexities, having to plan meals. The traits that go with some eating disorders and stuff. And so that was, we did some show in that particular space. We also done a show with him on sleep, good sleep hygiene, and issues with those with ADHD, sleep issues. We've also done a show with Dr. Tuchman on attention. We did a show with him on Attention Talk Video on metacognition and paying attention to what you're paying attention to. And one of the things that I don't think a lot of those with ADHD pay attention to is self-care, which we're going to kind of talk about. We've also had him on the show talking about ADHD and friendships and relationships and those types of things. And at the end of the day, I made kind of a list of when it comes to ADHD, you have ADHD can impact eating and weight, sleep, self-care, which would include exercise. You certainly have the side effects of meds if you're taking them that can impact your world. You have a rebound effect sometimes when they wear off, friends, things around the house. If you have kids, you've got to work with them for homework. You've got carpool, and you got what I call cross-docking in my house, and that's when everybody brings their stuff home for the day. That would be school and work, and then you have to get all the stuff to go out that evening, whether it's ultimate frisbee, soccer, basketball, volleyball, swimming, or whatever, and the organization goes with that. Plus, if you're a parent, you have a kid that you're having to work and learn and oversee IEP and Section 504 plans. Of course, then there's the regular laundry, car maintenance, holiday hell, I call it, and that's just trying to plan for all that stuff. So it's a real juggling act. And so today the focus of the show is to talk to these two gentlemen about how to pay attention and how to bring some simplicity to life. And I guess, Dr. Olivar, let's kind of start with you. I know you want to talk about a little bit of bringing together weight, sleep, and exercise. So I guess from your perspective, for somebody who has ADD, what should they be paying attention to in order to bring some balance and peace to their life with regard to these areas?
Sure. Well, what's important is that for any patient that I work with in my intake, I always ask them about their eating habits, how many meals they eat, what time of day they eat, generally what kind of food they eat, how many hours a night they sleep, what are those hours, and that's regardless of what their diagnosis is. Because if your eating and your sleeping is dysregulated, if you think of that as sort of the bottom of the pyramid, and as well as they ask about exercise and physical activity, if the bottom of the pyramid is not really set and grounded, then the whole pyramid is going to be a bit unstable. So we start with these very basic functions of living in terms of how are you eating and sleeping and are you being physically active. And to people with ADD, all of those areas present different challenges. But what's important is for people to understand that there are valid reasons for that. It's not just because people with ADD are lazy or weak or have no willpower. It's none of those things. That there are a lot of physiological explanations for that. So if we start with food, I mean, if you think about eating healthy, it requires a certain level of executive functioning. And people with ADD, as we know, have a lot of deficits in executive function. So to eat healthy, you have to have planning skills in terms of organizing your meals. If you're going to eat at 5 o'clock, you have to start thinking about it perhaps at 3 o'clock. You need to defrost that meat. That defrosting has to happen prior to the time that you're eating. Many people with ADD start thinking about preparing the meal at the moment that they're just hit with the wall of hunger, which then can often have them over-rely on fast foods or going out to eat, which is often really unhealthy and fattening. And also, you know, people with ADD often can self-soothe with food, either self-soothing their hyperactivity or they feel that they're sort of distractible and kind of here, there, and everywhere. The food is a very grounding mechanism for them. There's a lot of biological research looking at how people with ADD actually metabolize sugar at a slower rate, which means that they actually can take in a lot more sugar before their brain says, whoa, that's a lot of sugar, which can predispose people with ADHD to obesity. And in fact, there's a multitude of empirical studies that show a high prevalence of ADHD in gastric bypass patients and obese populations, which is almost contrary to how some people might see it. That if you have hyperactivity, that you're probably burning a lot of calories, but actually the opposite is true, that people with ADHD are highly prone to weight issues. And I treat a number of people who have straight-on eating disorders, like bulimia nervosa or binge eating disorder. So eating very properly is so important. People with ADD tend to skip breakfast, which just predisposes them to binge eat or overeat later on in the day. And that correlates with sleep, which is another very big important issue. If we're not sleeping properly, our metabolism actually gets quite dysregulated. So eating and sleep go hand in hand. And I don't know anybody with ADD that doesn't have some issue with sleep, whether it's going to bed too late, whether it's having a hard time waking up in the morning, whether it's staying awake during the day, particularly if they're not highly stimulated, and then severe sleep disorders like sleep apnea, narcolepsy are highly associated for people with ADHD. And what happens is that if the body isn't sleeping, the brain thinks that a higher order need must need to be filled. And the only thing that's more important than sleeping is eating and drinking water. And so guess what happens is when we're sleep deprived, we have a hormone in our body called leptin that elevates. And what leptin does is it does two things. It lowers our metabolism, which means we're now not burning calories as quickly as we would, and it actually increases our craving for fat carbs. So if you're sleep deprived, your body is actually searching for more carbs and more fat to eat while simultaneously lowering your ability to burn calories, which again predispose you to putting on a lot of weight, a lot of eating. So watching your sleep, getting a sleep study, if you find that you have very restless sleep, is so, so integral. And then, of course, we know that sleep deprivation is only going to exacerbate ADHD symptoms like inattention and distractibility much more so.
That's fascinating. I think that you link those two very well together. One of my things is what I'm curious about is exercise can be an anecdote for both of those, right?
Absolutely. That exercise is something that each of us should do every day. So exercise, absolutely, it increases your metabolism. It increases your mental acuity and clarity. It is very good for attention, that there are endorphins that get released in your brain, which are sort of reward chemicals that are very pleasing to someone with ADHD, that often people with ADHD brains are often very low in dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter that's associated with reward. So exercise elevates levels of dopamine in the brain. So absolutely, exercise helps regulate our appetite, and it actually helps regulate our sleep. So that is a wonderful anecdote. And even when I say exercise, you know, the other thing that makes that difficult for people with ADHD is they feel, you know, if they don't work out X amount, they can get very black or white about it. You know, unless I work out 5 days at the gym, it's not going to be worth it. Or unless I'm bench pressing 300 pounds, then what's the point? And doing something is better than doing nothing. So if that something is walking 20 minutes, then that's better than doing nothing. You know, taking the stairs instead of the elevator, those type of things. But then, of course, any regular workout. But, of course, for people with ADD, they get bored very easily, which I understand, having ADD myself. So you have to mix it up. You have to have a physical activity that is fun, that is stimulating. And if it's not going to the gym and lifting weights, maybe it's swimming. Maybe it's playing racquetball with a friend. Maybe it's skiing. So trying to find something and mixing it up. And if you are going to the gym, it's okay if every week you have a different workout routine, if that's what you need to kind of keep the novelty of the routine.
Yep. It's interesting. While you've been talking, I've been kind of looking at some notes, and we were kind of framing out some things. You were going to kind of talk about these things, and we've got some things for Ari, like relationships and other stuff. And Kirsten, I can't help the thing that popped in my mind, and we did a show on this with David Gwork a couple years ago, is his machine, mind, and mission model. You've been schooled in that model, right, Kirsten?
I have been schooled in it.
And everybody, real quickly, it's a fun model in coaching that we've learned from the ADD Coach Academy. And you think of it like this: is you have the mind, which is the machine, it's the gray matter, and then the physical brain, which is like the gray matter. Then you have the mind, which is the thoughtful, mindful brain that has the ideas and belief. And your physical brain and your mind have to be in harmony in order for you to accomplish your mission. And what is interesting to me is I just realized is that, Dr. Olivari, a lot of things that you've been talking about is optimizing the physical brain, making sure you get sleep, making sure that it's the nutrition is there and the exercise balance is there to optimize. It's kind of like if your hardware of your computer is not working very well, the operating system and the applications can only run so well. So what you've been speaking to is really optimizing the physical brain so the thoughtful, mindful brain can do what it does. I'm curious, have you heard that type of concept anywhere before?
Oh, definitely. I think that's a good analogy, actually, with the computer, that I think what a lot of people with ADHD don't realize is, and I I get it. I mean, I would engage in these habits myself, that I would be, let's say, hyper-focused on something and be so hyper-focused on it that it would run right through lunch and right through dinner, and I didn't want to, you know, distract my attention away from that. And then it's midnight and I'm starving. And at that point, I want to just put ketchup on my couch and just eat it. I mean, when you're that hungry, you'll eat anything. I mean, anything looks good. And of course, when we're starving like that, we do not crave broccoli. You know, we don't crave lettuce like when we're that hungry. And there's a reason for that. It's because our brain, if we're in a starvation mode, it, at the end of the day, it ultimately could live off fat more than it could live off of anything else. And so when we have hit that wall of hunger, and when your stomach growls, be aware that that doesn't mean that you should be eating right now. That meant you should have eaten at least an hour or two ago. If we're actually thirsty, like if our thirst is so strong, that means we're already in the early stages of dehydration. And for people with ADD, they often can be very disconnected from their body, their internal body cues, because they're so externally connected to whatever stimulation is outside, and they could miss those type of things in terms of, oh, I'm starting to get hungry right now. And it's so important to just stop, you know, pause, get something to eat, and understand that that interruption, or what feels like an interruption, is actually going to nourish your brain to help you more with whatever task you're doing. But wow. For people with ADD, they often label it, I could understand. I mean, philosophically, I would look at sleep as a complete, almost as just an interference in my day.
Uh-huh.
And logically, I know that sleep is so important and that we need it. And of course, I advocate that, you know, for my patients. But, you know, I used to think, gosh, you know, if we didn't have to sleep, there's so much more I could get done. But the reality is, and I remember in those college days when I would pull all-nighters, that I would pull all-nighters, I would get papers done, but some of those papers, I mean, when I would even just sleep for 3 to 4 hours and then wake up and look at what I wrote at those wee hours of the night, I mean, they were just gibberish, some of them. I mean, my brain just wasn't working correctly. And so understanding that sleep and eating are not nuisances, that they're actually the very thing that are going to get you to where you want to get to.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, we need to take a break real quick. When we come back, all right, I want to kind of move a little bit to the mindful brain, talk about relationships and stress and simplification stuff. But before we do, if any of our listeners want to contact you, emails are okay for them to send, right, gentlemen?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's Roberto, Roberto, underscore Olivardia, Olivardia, at hms.harvard.edu. And Ari, yours is Ari at Tuckman, TUCKMANPSYCHE.com. Did I get that correct?
No E on the end, so just TuckmanPsych.com.
Thank you very much. And also, your website, people can access your book at addadultbook.com. Did I get that right?
It's adultadhdbook.com.
All right. That's right. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Hey. Hey, you.
Are you the parents of a child with ADHD? Does your child need successful task completion structures? We are Hey You, and we make routines fun and easy.
Time to rise, so open your eyes.
Go to heyuadhd.com and download our task completion programs today.
Shake it out, shake it out. Move the body around.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Attention Talk Radio. We're here with our circus clowns talking about the ADHD juggling act. And while the break was going on, I was corresponding a little bit with my counterpart. Kirsten, you're not feeling so good tonight, is that right?
I'm not feeling so good tonight.
So I hope it's just you're sick and that you've been, you know, balancing sleep and your food and exercising properly. It's not culprit of that, I hope.
Gosh, I don't think so. I mean, I've been eating super healthy.
Yeah.
I got extra sleep last night, which was really nice, and I've been drinking a lot of water today, so, yeah.
Well, let me ask you real quick before we transition to some stuff I want to talk about. Ari, what enables you to eat right and go to sleep on time? Do you have a secret or a trick?
Well, long ago I found out that if I eat a clean diet, that my brain works better.
Mm-hmm.
And so not to say that there haven't been periods of time when I eat really badly, but I've been really strict about my eating, which, you know, it's hard sometimes. But when I feel better, I don't think about those foods that, you know, the sugars and the carbs and all those kinds of things as much. So,
but do you have a way? Because as Dr. Olivari said, you know, there's a fair amount of planning that goes into eating right and some discipline that goes into sleep. Do you have any tricks of the trade that works for you that enables you to do that?
Well, I think as far as eating, I always think about what I can eat as opposed to what I can't eat.
Mm-hmm.
If I start thinking about what I can't eat, it makes me want to eat that. So that's one of my tricks. And then with sleep, I think just knowing, like, when I have to be at work the next day, so I'm mindful about when it's important for me to go to sleep so that I have a full 8 hours to sleep at night. And then today was like a bonus day because I didn't really have to be anywhere anytime this morning. So I actually got up and then went back to sleep.
Wow.
And yeah, it was great, but it didn't get rid of my headache. So.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
The one of the things that everybody we want to do is we want to kind of frame this stuff out, and then we're going to start talking a little bit towards the end of the show about how to balance all these stuff, some simplification type things. But before we do that, Dr. Tuckman, moving to the mindful side, relationships and thoughts and what you pay attention to and stress management, can you just kind of just raise some of the key issues that you see in this space and your thoughts around that as some challenges, and then we'll start moving to talk about what those with ADHD can do to kind of balance all this.
Sure. You know, life can be complicated, but it's not just what's actually going on around you. It's the interpretations that you make of what's going on around you. So, you know, when we talk about stress, we often talk about it as if, you know, there's these demands on me and then I feel stressed, as if these are sort of one and the same. But demands does not automatically equate to stress. What equates to stress is feeling kind of overwhelmed or overburdened by the demands placed on you, as opposed to being able to look at it and say, well, I have a lot to do and I will get it done, and some of it I won't perhaps, but I'm not going to allow it to make me feel kind of crazy. You know, and this is one of the places where mindfulness training can be so helpful, is that it helps us kind of separate what's going on around us from how we feel on the inside, or it helps to separate, you know, where we put our attention, or it helps us direct where we put our attention and separate how we feel from perhaps what we do, you know. So feeling anxious but not acting in an anxiety-driven kind of a way. So these are definitely they're worth striving for. You know, they're good goals for, I think, everybody to have. But, you know, as Roberta talked about in terms of sleep and exercise and eating, again, this is one of those places where folks with ADHD might have a little bit of a harder time because there's just more, you know, folks with ADHD have all the same demands that everybody else does. But if you have a harder time kind of mentally managing all of those, keeping track of it, doing all those little bitty, you know, little kind of ounce of prevention, pound of cure kind of a thing, you're going to more often find yourself in situations where there are greater demands on you. So it feels more stressful. So, you know, because of that, I think folks with ADHD tend to have higher stress levels often than folks without ADHD, except in the case of teenagers with ADHD, in which case their parents have higher stress levels.
I'm kind of curious. A couple years ago, I guess last year, I interviewed Dr. Barkley on his new EFDD construct, and he talked about ADD in this thing as being a self-regulation issue, not an attention issue. And since that interview, it's fascinated me because more and more when I'm working with people, I'm noticing, you know, there are, like, kids, they play computer games. They don't have a problem paying attention, so it's not really an attention issue, but sometimes they can't stop and sometimes they can't pay attention to things that maybe they should. But the other side of it is Dr. Barkley's push that emotion is very much a part of ADD. And then, so if ADD is really a self-regulation issue and you need to be able to regulate your attention and regulate your emotion, in listening to you with Dr. Olivardi's stuff, like trying to pay attention to the executive planning to buy food and do that stuff right, that's the focus to do that. Moving to the stress side, the challenges associated with paying attention to that stuff, to me, I just thinking out loud, it's almost like it can manifest in the emotional side, and those with ADHD might have more difficulty managing the emotion, going back to kind of what you were talking about when you started this about stress and focusing on that. In articulating that, what do you think about it? Does that logically make some sense, or you have a different view? Just framing it out that way, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think it absolutely. And, you know, Roberto said that folks with ADHD sometimes don't self-monitor as well in terms of hunger levels and things like that because they're more pulled by the outside world. And that's exactly, like, that's the kind of stuff Barkley's talking about in terms of self-regulation, that self-regulation first it begins with self-awareness because you can't regulate something you're not aware of. So, you know, if you're more pulled by the demands around you, you're not as self-aware of how you're doing, and then that undermines your ability to engage in good self-care. And part of good self-care is stress management, and that means being able to see the demands placed on you and step back, take some perspective on it, and say, this is important, I'm going to address that. That's less important. That's going down the list. Well, I might get to that, I might not. And then also, ooh, this looks really fun. But you know what, I'm not going to do that now. That is going to be fun, but I'm going to do it later. So being able to manage that stuff more effectively then leads to less stress, as opposed to feeling kind of driven by the circumstances around you, which is a much more stressful situation to be in.
So you started this off by talking about mindfulness. I know that we've interviewed Dr. Olivardi on OCD and talked about behavioral therapy. I know Kirsten's familiar with behavioral therapy. We've done a show with you, Dr. Tuckman, on the difference between ADHD coaching and cognitive behavioral therapy. And I remember we were going back and forth in debate. At one point in time, you just said, hey, listen, a good idea is a good idea because the two are kind of coming together. But a lot of that is centered on mindfulness. The more I talk to the likes of you and other experts, being aware and paying attention to what you're paying attention to seems to me to be one of the more critical skills those with ADHD need in order to manage their life.
It is. I mean, it absolutely is. I think that, you know, this is why, you know, often one of the suggestions I make is that it's easier to regulate your attention if there are fewer distractions around you. So, in other words, to kind of simplify your life, to get things organized, not in a way that's going to please Martha Stewart, but in a functional kind of a way. So you're not wasting extra time looking for things that are lost in the shuffle. Getting rid of those distractions that pull your attention away from where it should be. So, you know, when you simplify your life, it becomes easier to manage the stuff that's left. I think the challenge is that, you know, for all of us these days, but maybe a little bit more so for folks with ADHD, is that there's a lot of really interesting, exciting things out there, and novelty tends to be interesting and exciting. But the problem is, the more novelty you bring into your life, unless you're also getting rid of things, it leads to more in your life in total. And then things begin to get squeezed out, not for kind of intentional, I made a choice about this reasons, but rather simply because I ran out of time. So I ran out of time to eat, I ran out of time to exercise, or I ran out of time to get a good night's sleep because I'm staying up too late. So, you know, I think all of these things, they all come together.
So you said simplifying your life in a functional way. Did I hear that, interpret that correctly?
Yeah.
I want to give an example of simplifying your life in a functional way, and I'd like to ask each one of you to comment on it individually. I was working with a woman one time whose son was hyperactive, ADD, and the room was a mess. And because I'm kind of going to this whole notion of balancing the juggling act, and the room was a mess. And I said, I was talking to her, and I was kind of curious. I said, does it all have to be kind of neat and tiny? And she said something that revolutionized my thought process. She said, no, everything just needs to be in its home. And I was like, whoa. And I started to imagine myself being a child with ADHD and bouncing off the walls. And the notion of having to take a shirt, unpull a drawer, put the shirt in, and push it back in was just a lot of boring work that if it wasn't exciting, I wouldn't want to do. And it came to me, I said, what would you like to put four baskets, get rid of the chest of drawers and put four baskets, one for underwear and socks, one for shirts, one for pants and shorts, and one for dirty clothes, and put backboards on it so the kid could shoot buckets and, like, play basketball as a means to clean the room. And in that moment, that illustration is, number one, paying attention to what you're paying attention to, and that is that it's not really a chest of drawers is organization, but if it has a home, it doesn't need to be in chest of drawers. It can be something simple as baskets. And that is a notion of simplifying your life on a more functional basis, which is kind of working backwards. So, Kirsten, I want to ask you to comment first, and then Dr. Olivardi, and then I'll come back to you, Tuckman. Dr. Tuckman, just what are your thoughts on that concept in the scheme of this is the way, if you focus on this, this is how you can go about simplifying your life and be able to manage this?
So your question is about simplifying your life in a functional way.
Yeah, and the notion of pausing and sitting back and say, what am I really trying to accomplish here, and think of functionally how I can get there as opposed to sticking with the belief that it's got to be a certain way.
Well, I think, you know, a few things, and it's interesting that we're talking about this because it was something that I was paying attention to today, which is, you know, oftentimes we're doing so much internal work to try and simplify our lives. We're trying to focus more or, you know, organize our thoughts or whatever. And that sometimes simplifying in a functional way may mean simplifying what's around us, as you were pointing out with the room. So simplifying it so that things work for us. I think I've given the example before of having the organizer come in and help me at my house. And she put everything into folders because that was how she knew to organize everything. That's functional for most people. But for me, that didn't work. So simplifying my life in a functional way sometimes means that I have piles that are organized but that I can see.
Yep.
So go ahead.
No. So that's functional for you. It's not to believe it has to go into a folder, but saying this is functional for me and it works for me, so there might be stuff out, but that's what works. It's simplifying my life, and it's easy to bring balance.
Exactly.
Dr. Olivardi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think what I like, I think that's a great suggestion that you gave that person. And what I like about it and what's important, and probably the most important thing in my work with people with ADHD is really accepting that they have ADHD and that their brain is wired in such a way that might make sort of quote-unquote more conventional routes not work for them, and that they don't have to have any shame or judgment around that. And, you know, similar to Kirsten's example that, you know, I'm a very visual person, and so I, as much as I can, try to have things in sight, but I also, as Ari was talking about, I can get very distracted by that stuff at the same time, so I have to be very methodical of how I do it. And interestingly, you know, when we were talking about obsessive-compulsive disorder, that, you know, when I was in college, my friends used to comment that, you know, they said, oh, you know, you're so OCD, but it's more that I was actually trying to manage my environment in regards to my ADD, that I would keep my room a certain way and I would be, you know, very organized about putting things in a certain way because I knew if I didn't, that it would be harder for me to focus or be attentive. Reading, which was always very difficult for me, I found it was impossible for me to read at a library or in my room. So I would go on the subway train. I'm from Boston, and I would just take the subway back and forth, and I would find that I could read 7 pages to every 1 page that I could read in my apartment in graduate school. And those kind of things, as long as you're not hurting anybody or hurting yourself, go for it. And so I think that for people with ADHD, when we talk about simplifying, it's very much around simplifying in a way that works for you and gets you closer to what your goal is, because ultimately that's what we're all striving for.
I really loved what you said. I'm going to jump on a subway because I can go read. That's easier for me. It simplifies my life as opposed to staying home and forcing myself to do it the way that I think I'm supposed to do it.
Exactly, which would just lead me to be frustrated. I would just stop doing it. And if I had the thought of, oh, I should be able to do this because that's just what you do, or people go to a library, and I should be able to sit here and study, but instead I was either falling asleep or looking for anybody that I could talk to, whoever it was, you know, at the library, and I could talk to anybody. And so it just wasn't working for me. And so absolutely, it's really simplifying is what simplifying to me might not look simplifying for someone else. I mean, for most people, riding on the subway and reading is not their ideal place you know, to be reading. It's on a subway train. But for many people with ADD, you'll see them at, you know, the local coffee shops or places that might seemingly be distracting to them, but actually isn't.
Yep, I think it goes back to what Dr. Tuckman, and I'll let you comment here in a second, Dr. Tuckman, is it's the mindfulness of paying attention to what works for you and simplifying it. So, Dr. Tuckman, your comment on this little round table of simplification and functionality.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm just going to piggyback on what's already been said, and whether it's the clothes in the baskets example or Roberto reading on the train example, it comes down to there's three options, but only two of them are actually available. So the one option that is available is, I don't know, I'll use Roberta's example of reading in the library. So make yourself go to the library and not get much reading done. That's one option. Another option is go on the train and get much more reading done. And the third option, which is not available, is go to the library like everybody else, so to speak, you know, in quotes, whatever that means. Go to the library like everybody else and get a whole lot done. Option three is not available. And I think that when you don't accept your ADHD or somebody else's, or just don't accept something about yourself, you know, you stay stuck on the option that isn't available. And when option three is not available, what you're left with is the first one, which is go to the library, not get much done, as opposed to if you can accept the fact that, you know what, I process information a little differently, or simply, I freaking hate the library. I could kill myself there. Put me on a train, I get much more done. Like, if it's as simple as that, then your option becomes, I'm reading a ton more of my book. So by accepting it, by not trying to do it somebody else's way, or by not, you know, Kirsten, not accepting, like, you know what, I hate putting stuff into folders, it doesn't work for me, it enables you to really kind of be at your best. in terms of the different things that you need to do. And I think that, you know, again, this comes back to kind of self-awareness and self-knowledge, kind of knowing yourself and being willing to try some things to figure out what does work for you. But, you know, to bring it back to the eating and the sleeping and the exercise, like, these are the first three things to go, unfortunately, for many of us, that when we begin to get overwhelmed, when we have too much going on, when we're inefficient about doing what we need to do, these are the things, you know, it's the eating, sleeping, and exercise. These are the first three things that go out the window.
They're the first things to go out the window, but if you pay attention, you need, as they say, an airline, you know, put the mask on yourself first, because what good are you to your kids if you can't do that? What good are you to everybody else if you don't pay attention to yourself first so that your brain is optimized so your mind can work? Go to a break again real quick. For our listeners, if you would like to get any questions for Dr. Olivardi, his email is robert_Olivardi, Olivardia, at hms.harvard.edu. Dr. Tuckman is Ari, A-R-I, at TUCKMANPSYCHE.com. And you can go to Dr. Tuckman's website, adultadhdbook.com. There's a wealth of information there. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're having a great conversation with two of our favorite guests, Dr. Tuckman and Dr. Olivardia. Before the break, we were talking about kind of the anecdote to some of this stuff and the juggling act to simplify things. And I made some notes I just want to kind of share. These are some interesting things that I've learned from people that I've coached in terms of simplifying their life for functionality. One, I was talking to this woman one day, and I was coaching her, and there was an echo, and I go, "Where are you?" She said, "Oh, I'm in my office." I said, "Really? What's it, there's an echo?" And she said, "That's because of all the tile." And I said, "There's tile in your office?" She said, "Oh, well, my office is my kitchen." And I go, "What?" She goes, "Yeah, I don't cook. I mean, I use the refrigerator, but there's all these drawers and cabinets and stuff like that. It's great for organization." And it just blew me away that she took a look at a room that a lot of people would have a belief that it has to be a kitchen, and since she didn't cook, she had I don't know where she got her food, but the point really is she said, "This is a more functional room for me to have as my office as a traditional set." And I was like, that was kind of wild. Then recently I was coaching a family, and they turned the laundry room into a closet. They said, "Yeah, everything makes it there anyway because it's dirty, and you end up going there to get your clothes. It never makes it to your closet." So we said, "The hell with that." They just started putting some stuff up to hang some clothes, and they effectively turned it into like a mass closet. And I thought, how brilliant is that? And then one other guy I was coaching, I was talking about this notion of organization that really needs a home, and he's like, "You know, we kick our shoes off at the door, the garage door, when we go in because we have white carpets and, you know, whatever." And he goes, I was looked at and said, "You know, I'm not very organized," but he realized that they had a home. There was a pile of shoes next to the door. I mean, he knew exactly where they are. I mean, he never didn't know where they were. And one day he was at a garage sale and he saw this thing and said, "You know something? The shoes have a home, but they need a new house." So he just brought this cabinet or whatever to dress it up. And it was interesting because he changed his definition of organization. Like, how, when you think about how useful this is to carry your shoes up to put them in a closet and then carry them back down to put them on. And I use those as fun examples of, if you pay attention to what you're paying attention to and you look at the functionality and you simplify your life, you can make things a lot easier. So with that, I want to open this up to any other thoughts, tips, or things that that can help those with ADHD. And I do want to save one space because I want to talk to Kirsten real in a little bit about play and making this kind of fun. So Ari, other ideas, thoughts, tips come to mind?
You know, when it comes to kind of simplifying getting organized, one of the first things I tend to recommend is to just go through and get rid of as much as possible, because it's easy to accumulate things, and things kind of stick around, not because we're actively choosing to keep it, but because we're just kind of passively accepting that it's still there. And I think that but it's much easier to organize what you have left if there's a lot less there to begin with. So first pass is just, before you put anything back into any new home or whatever, is just to roll through and get rid of as much stuff as you can, whether it's items or even, frankly, activities in your life that you're doing, so that it's easier to then figure out what to do with the rest of it.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I liked what you said about that, but also you brought activities into it, because sometimes every time you say yes to say something, you're saying no to something. So if I'm saying yes to go to that, maybe you're saying no to exercise or some other things. Dr. Olivardi, any thoughts?
I love, first of all, I love all those examples that you had mentioned, Jeff, and this is why the first time I went to a CHAD conference, I felt like I was with my posse and amongst my peeps, because I think that's really what it's about, is really understanding, well, this is just how I'm wired and how I'm oriented. And I think what's so important about shows like this, or just education that people can get about ADHD, is really understanding their brain and understanding why certain things are going to be difficult for them. So in regards to eating, for example, that, you know, I understand now why I used to have coffee with my sugar, because I love sugar, and I could eat or drink something that someone else could think is just way too sweet, and I do not register it as sweet. But because I know that my brain could metabolize glucose at a slower rate, I have to be more careful than perhaps someone else is in terms of, eating things that are very high in sugar. Knowing that I have ADD and that sleep disorders just go hand in hand with it, I have to pay that much more attention to it. And what I tell my clients or just people I know with ADHD is that, sleep is a very basic biological function. And many people go to sleep, they don't give it a second thought. It takes them 5 minutes from their time the head hits the pillow and they wake up. It's just not an issue. And the reality is it is an issue for many people with ADD. And not to fight that per se, but just to educate yourself and then, again, to do and find what works. But the acceptance is huge, and the education is a very, very important piece, because it validates the experience, and then you move forward with it, and it can really help you avoid major pitfalls.
While you were talking, I apologize, because I just had a brainstorm. We did an interview, and I want to illustrate more ideas of paying attention to what you're paying attention to, simplifying your life, knowing how you work. And, you know, Kirsten, we did an interview, I think it was the end of August, with Terry Maitland. You remember that?
I do.
And it was profound to me, because she's a ADHD professional, but we asked her to come on as a ADHD mom, and there's a few things that stood out to me. She had the two-parent rule, or two-adult rule. So whenever her children were there, there was always two adults. So she would either go hire a babysitter, or she'd have somebody else there because her kids were ADD, and it was simplifying her life. And I thought, wow, that was interesting. Another thing that was profound was, she was militant-like in her IEP meetings with school that no homework come home. In other words, the child was either to do the homework there or wasn't to come home because I thought it was brilliant, because she said, I don't want to have a negative relationship with my child, or I'm beating them to do homework. I want to have a loving, trusting kind of relationship. And she talked about, you know, if it could stay at school, it would made a lot of sense. And I was just amazed because I never thought about that. But she's like, you know, sometimes I really had to hold my guns, and maybe the school district didn't like me, but I'm simplifying my life. And then the other thing, when it came to meals, that she modularized it. It was like, here's the pack, because you can get these apple packets now and, like, you know, these things. And the kids would, it was like an assembly line. They would grab the different packets of healthy food and put it, so the prep time really wasn't prep time. It was really just assembling the packages and boxes from, like, you know, here's the package of carrots and here's the pre-done sandwich and whatever to simplify their lives. And I just want to share that stuff because it's, again, an illustration of just simplifying your life. Two other things I wanted to ask you guys on. We did an interview with Rick Green of Totally ADD about the impact of humor on ADHD and the notion that, you know, sometimes humor's, you can't be afraid and laugh at the same time. And if you're using humor and just kind of like lightheartedly, it can take the pressure off and make things a little bit easier. Dr. Olivardia, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say that Ari Tuckman and I know nothing about humor. But actually, we specialize in it. I'm really, really glad that you brought that up, Jeff, because it is a very, very important piece of the puzzle, and you're absolutely right. It's very hard to be afraid. It's very hard to be anxious if you're laughing. And physiologically, I mean, when we're laughing, there are endorphins. We're getting those squirts of dopamine, that all of these things that are actually very healthy for us. And it's no wonder that even research of people that live to be 100 years old, that one of the common personality traits that you see is that they have a very healthy sense of optimism and sense of humor. And I think that goes along with the acceptance piece, too, that you have to sometimes laugh at some of these things. If I beat myself up over every sort of ADDism, you know, that happens, that it's very easy to wear your self-esteem into the ground. And so you kind of have to laugh at some of these things and find humor in your environment. Have it be is something like exercise, and healthy eating is something that you're very mindful of. You know, did I laugh today? Did something sort of tickle me in a certain way? Am I surrounding myself with people who make me laugh or who are funny? And it really, really absolutely makes a difference. It really is one of the best forms of medicine.
We did an interview with Greg Kurtz a couple years ago about it was some attention exercises, and he talked, you know, thoughts, we're bombarded by thoughts. You can't control them, and don't even try to. But the notion is your life experience is a function of the thoughts that you choose to pay attention to. And the humor comment is if you choose to look at the funny things in life and stuff, as you described, Dr. Olivardia, from more of a clinical, biological side, and what it does so much for you, and really focusing on that is a choice, as we've had Dr. Tuckman on talking about. We did a whole show just on attention and that notion that actually attention's a choice. Dr. Tuckman, any comments on the humor concept?
Yeah, I think humor is incredibly important. And, you know, as a psychologist who spends all day talking with people about, you know, I mean, a lot of it is the things that are bad in their life or that they would like different in their life, to be able to laugh about it or to, you know, to make a joke about it does help us sort of face something. It helps us see things or it helps us see how absurd a situation is, and that enables us to then, you know, have a bit more motivation to do something different about it. So I think that there's a lot of value in humor, and I think that, you know, there's an intentionality about it in the sense that, you know, you can intentionally seek out the humor in a situation or intentionally allow yourself to laugh a little bit, even if it's at your own expense. It's better to laugh at it than it is to cry about it. I think the flip side of this is not only to bring in more of the positive, but also to kind of steer away from some of the negative. So whether it's some people in your life or, you know, some of the TV shows that are on or, you know, the 6 o'clock news where it's all about, you know, who got shot and, you know, kind of terrible things like that, or these, you know, reality shows that are just stressful, like there's, you know, bad people behaving badly kind of things. You know, to minimize some of that, or at least to kind of moderate the doses of it that you get. Because if you're getting too much of it, it's going to have an effect on your general mood and your general mindset.
And I can't help it. You just the way you described that, I have to go back to our interview with Rick Green. He said, you know, humor can actually be used as a shield. And the way you described it, Ari, just kind of like, oh, I forgot to say that, because if you do use it the right way, it can be a shield. You can deflect some of that negativeness and judgment and other things just in looking at the fun side of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which leads me into one last thing, because I wanted to kind of turn. Kirsten has been working on the concept play. Kirsten, make sure I get this. Play ADHD or play DHD?
Play DHD.
And the concept is to bring play into your life. Is that accurate?
It is.
And I can't help but think if you're trying to deal with this juggling act, today what I took from it all is, number one, is you got to optimize the physical brain, and you need to pay attention, be mindful of the mindful brain. Simplify your life. Pay attention to what you're paying attention to and try to break it down to simple form so that you can reduce all the moving parts. The more moving parts you got, the more things that can break, as they say. Have fun with it and play with it. So, Kirsten, I want to ask you, can you talk about the importance of play and how it can relate to helping people deal with the juggling act or the circus of ADHD?
Absolutely. One of the reasons that I started focusing so much on play is because, you know, when people are in the spirit of play, whether it's on their own or with a friend, whether it's, you know, being at a playground throwing a ball or being in sports or even creating something. When I'm working on the computer creating programs or, you know, presentations, things like that, that's play for me. So there's all different kinds of play, but when we're in that mode, we're feeling motivated, we're paying attention, you know, we have a lot of interest in whatever we're doing. And to me, that is what people with ADHD need more of, to be focused, to start paying attention to what's going on for themselves and making things easier. So by playing and keeping, you know, some aspect of play in our activities as much as possible, we naturally are able to focus and simplify our lives, be happier about how things are going, be effective in what we're doing, and be our best, be healthy, sleep well. If I've had a good day of play, I know that I'm going to sleep well that night, and likely I'm going to be eating foods that are healthy because they're going to be fueling me, and I want to keep on going. So,
after all, play is fun, right?
Play is fun, and it really feels good.
Gentlemen, I'm not so sure you're aware that Kirsten was doing that. Any comments on the concept of play?
Oh, I'm a big, big fan of play. And when I was, you know, in graduate school and in my PhD program, that I was very mindful of needing to have my play time to balance out all of the hard work that I did. And I'm a huge music fan. I own about 3,000 CDs, and I go to as many concerts as I can. I'm going to 2 in next week alone. And when I was in grad school, I used to go sometimes 2-3 times a week to different shows. And people would look at and think, oh, you know, I'm just having this grand old time. But what it was me being attentive to, right now is my playtime. I'm just going to disconnect from all this work and really enjoy this. And what that did is actually enabled me to, when I was working, to focus that much more on work. I didn't resent it because I knew, hey, you know, I have my playtime and I have my work time. And as adults, I think we often lose that. We think of the word play as a childish word, as a childhood word. And I think a lot of adults really disconnect from the experience of that and what it means to play. We get so caught up in you know, just crossing every T and dotting every I, that it's important to ask yourself, you know, when did I last play, and what did I like to do, and what do I like to do right now? I still get excited about going to concerts in the same way I did when I was 10 years old, when I went to my very first concert, and that's so important.
Awesome. Dr. Tuckman, thoughts?
Absolutely. I agree. I think that play is extremely important. I think that it kind of recharges our brain in the sense of it gives us a bit more energy, a bit more discipline then to tackle the next task. But I think it's – and play means a lot of things. I mean, it could mean, you know, digging a hole in the dirt pit with my son because he loves digging holes in the dirt. Or it could be, like Kirsten said, you know, creating – I don't know, like if I'm working on slides for a presentation, I'm really having a good time with it and it's creative and the juices are flowing. I think there's a certain element of play to that as well. And, you know, certainly going to concerts and listening to music and, you know, things of that sort all kind of fits under that umbrella. I think that play is a very big umbrella. And I think that what it comes down to is kind of taking what's out there in the world around you and doing something a little bit different with it.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you very much for coming on our show tonight. It was, I think I learned a ton myself, put it together, and I think our listeners will enjoy it. And we're going to have to do this again sometime. You guys always favorite guests. So, Dr. Duffman, thank you very much. Dr. Oliver, thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody, Kirsten, we're going to pick it up next week. I think we've got Dr. Jeffrey Katz coming on motivation. So with that, everybody, have a great week, and tune in next week for a great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.